Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome into the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white. Drink blue and light. It's time for the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante along with Dustin Hawkinsmith. Dustin, how are you doing? Did you have a great weekend?
I did. I'm fired up. I'm ready to talk Penn State football as I always am. This time I've got a little bit of energy this morning, so that's good.
How about that? How'd that happen?
By accident. Total accident. It's not the 4.5 hours sleep, I can tell you that.
All right. Well, let's get started with the news right away here, Dustin. First off, this has been talked about for at least a week. I know we talked about it with the other guys, but I wanted to get your take on it. Finally, it's official. Ricky Slade is following Ricky Ronnie, heading to Old Dominion. Your thoughts on that?
I think that's a good thing for him and a chance to reclaim some of that potential that he clearly has. It didn't happen for him at the early part of last season. I thought as a true freshman going back to 2018, I thought he showed a lot of promise. There's a lot of explosiveness and quickness and, you know, he's got some wiggle to him and he shows the ability, I think, to be able to kind of slide in tight spaces to make the most out of runs. Last year, we didn't see him build upon that in the early stages of the season. And it begs the question, you know, is he a guy who needs a little bit more certainty, who needs a more consistent workload in order to work through some of that stuff? Because when he was, you know, pretty much just running into the backs of his offensive linemen, which happened pretty frequently at the start of last year, he had a quick leash because they were so deep at that position. And he ultimately fell victim to that depth, I think. It's not to say that he would have, if he were getting 15 to 20 touches per game all year, he would have broken through. But he's going to get that opportunity at Old Dominion, obviously a lower level of competition. I expect him to do some really good things just because physically he's got so much ability. And I hope the light bulb comes on for him for good. I think everybody should be rooting for that. I know we discussed the possibility of this last week, but now that it's official, I think it's an exciting move for him, a really good move for Ricky Ronnie, too, to get that caliber of player and athlete in your offense is a big deal for him, will help him in year one for sure.
From my perspective, the interesting part to this is this. I've always said I thought Ricky Slade needed the ball out in space, and I don't think they used him correctly at Penn State. He was running between the tackles. He's not a guy who's going to move the pile. He's not Noah Kane. And so what's fascinating to me is him going to Old Dominion with the same guy who was his offensive coordinator at Penn State. I'm going to be really curious to see how Ricky Ronnie chooses to use him at Old Dominion. So, and we are rooting for him. I've always been a big Ricky Slade guy. So I hope he does well there. Next up, Dustin, this offseason, of course, has been like no other we've had as for college football or any sport, actually. But unfortunately, so much of the news is related to the COVID pandemic. And a couple weeks ago, I think all of us were very excited and confident about college football happening. The unfortunate thing in the last week or two, the news has been a little more on the negative side. As these players are reporting to campus, you have many of them, the ones who are saying how many positive tests they're having. Some of the numbers are fairly high, you know, at Texas, at Clemson. What is your take on that? Should we start to be a little less optimistic about a college football season?
This whole thing has been about peeling back one layer at a time. And I don't even mean just when it comes to a pandemic as it relates to college football. Going back to March, this has been one little thin layer at a time that we're trying to figure out what this threat is, how rampant it is, how dangerous it is, and on and on and on. And it's been a moving target ever since. I don't think college football, it might feel like it's the target has moved some, and maybe it has, but really what has happened is you've taken you know, starting things up and workouts and getting players together, you've started to move from that being an idea or a concept to that being a reality. And I think all along it was just destined to be a sort of messy reality, because negative tests, or positive tests rather, are going to be inevitable. The question has always been, I don't think we have much more new information, is now what? Players are testing positive. Now what? How isolated are they going to be? Where are they going to stay? How are they going to interact at all with their teammates? How are schools going to deal with the inevitability of getting positive COVID-19 tests? We've started to get them. It feels like it maybe has posed a more of a threat on the season than initially thought. But I really feel like none of this should be a surprise. Maybe it's surprising the sheer number of them, but you know, these universities and football programs, you know, at large, like Penn State University needs to figure out, you know, you heard Eric Barron talk about using the Nittany Lion Inn as a place to isolate students who test positive. You know, these are the types of solutions that are going to be needed if you're going to have 100 players in the same location. If you're going to have players from different schools who, you know, Penn State doesn't know where Michigan State's players have been. So if one protocol goes wrong at Michigan State, then it threatens everybody. So I don't really know much else other than we've gotten a more clear idea just of how complicated and difficult this can be.
You know, Dustin, I had wrong impression, I think, when these reports started to come in. I thought of it as, well, if you do random testing of any 100 people in the population, this, you're going to get some positives. And this just so happens to be football teams. My assumption was these players were reporting and being tested, and they had it before they arrived on campus. Interesting, Clemson is the school that a lot of folks are talking about because their number is so high. I saw an interview with Kirk Herbstreit, who has two of his sons play at Clemson, and he actually said they only had two positive tests to begin with, and now they're up to 40 positives, which gives you the impression that they caught it while there and probably from each other. But one more thought, and I don't know if this is crazy for me to even think this way, but in a way, is this a positive for Clemson that their team may reach herd immunity, that, you know, once they have it, there's a certain amount of immunity and they're getting it now in late June as opposed to September, and they're getting it over with. Is there any truth to that? And again, we're not doctors, we're not medical people, but it seems like there could be a positive spin to this.
It's worth saying along these lines that the doctors and the medical people, sometimes it doesn't feel like they know a whole lot more than we do anyway. That's how it's felt from
that's
the beginning.
True. Yes, you're right.
So maybe we're not as, you know, maybe we're more qualified than we think, I guess. But I don't know. Maybe it's good that this thing runs its course, you know, and you know, the bigger things are, to me, not players infecting each other, because that is of some significance. They're in the demographic that doesn't seem to be at risk for this. But I would just say, you know, one thing along those lines, you know, Penn State had, what, two players retire from football because of heart conditions that were undiagnosed. I'm not a doctor, just to piggyback off your thinking there, but how many people in the general population, how many people from a football team, for example, have immune, you know, compromised issues that are undiagnosed? You know, like, and I guess that's just kind of the point, is that it doesn't appear to pose a threat to those players themselves. But it's that fact that I think about. And it's also the fact that, you know, the bigger issue is going to be containment. Are you going to be able to contain players who have tested positive, or players who might be positive that don't know it yet, and not allow them to spread to people who aren't voluntarily going and gathering like this? Other students or professors or whoever else, hotel staff, you know, how do you minimize the potential threat of your herd immunity on others? That to me is the biggest question of all.
And part of this too, Dustin, though, is for months and months, they've been telling us testing is critical, testing is key. In a way, this I had a friend call the college football teams a petri dish, a test bed. We talk about if you randomly pick out 100 people, there's going to be a certain amount of positive tests. But we don't do that. Nobody just picks 100 random people, except here in college football. That is being done. So we're finding out a little bit. And, you know, I wonder how many medical people are watching what's happening in the sports environment where you have that kind of test bed. Here's 100 young people aged, you know, 18 to 22. It's X percentage who are testing now that they've been on campus. But one of the differences is that the football players are going to be tested and watched a whole lot closer than the general population is. So it's going to be interesting to see. In the short amount of time we have, Dustin, I did want to mention Coach Franklin. We had brought this up in the show late in last week, is going to be isolated from his family. He has a daughter who has an issue already, so you don't want to put her in any danger. And James Franklin, in his position as a college football coach, is going to be exposed to a lot of people. The other thing, and I didn't see a lot of play on this, James Franklin was doing a couple interviews on national forums, and I saw in his ESPN interview, he mentioned that there are still a couple Penn State players who have not reported back to campus, and that there is at least one player who has an issue, also a medical issue, that may make him more vulnerable to this. I don't know if you saw that, Dustin, or have any thoughts on it.
I hadn't seen that, but again, I mean, it kind of speaks to the point I made, I guess, is that, you know, if you're going to look at a large group of football players as some kind of swath of the general population, one or two of these situations was going to arise. Penn State hasn't been crystal clear about who's coming, who's going, who's staying behind, and for what reasons. So I think this is just a little bit more information on that front. But yeah, it's not that surprising, I guess, to have players lagging behind and for this process to not be as straightforward as you would hope.
Exactly. And it's going to change every week. You know that it's changed every week in the last 8 weeks. It's going to be that way going forward. The only thing you can guarantee is that the narrative is going to change between now and then. All right. That's it for quarter number one. Come back on quarter number two. We're going to talk about what Penn State needs to do to become an elite team.
It's time to get undomesticated. It's time for Labatt Blue. Time to get off the couch and on the beach, on the trails, on the lake, onto what you love doing best. Get in touch with your adventurous side. Get out the ATV, the tent, the sunscreen. Get out the cooler and fill it high with Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light, because nothing goes better with the great outdoors. It's time to get up, get out, get undomesticated. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
This is Andy Shea from the Keystone Sports Network. You heard us talk about 409 tailgate sauce for a while now. Honesty moment. I use 409 tailgate sauce at my house, and it's a hit with my family and friends. My barbecue chicken always comes out great. The sauce also works on pork, beef. You can even put it on your burgers. Go to 409tailgateclub.com to order 409 tailgate sauce for you or that tailgater in your life. And remember, always tailgate with honor.
DraftKings Sportsbook is offering a mobile casino in Pennsylvania. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook and Casino app and use code KSN to play risk-free up to $200 of casino games for your first 24 hours. That's code KSN to play risk-free up to $200 for your first 24 hours of casino play on DraftKings Sportsbook and Casino. Must be 21 or older, Pennsylvania only, in partnership with Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.